The undiscovered black country, the folks don't seem to know. The undiscovered black country, where everyone should go. People walk or cycle round, they pass the time of day. The undiscovered black country has places tucked away.
I was talking to our John the other day, and he was telling me about he'd been on this committee that tried to save Brendel Golf Course, where I growed up, and he said they'd failed, and there was going to be a school put on there, and some houses and a leisure centre, and it sort of triggered me to want to go and have a look on the estate where I growed up. I hadn't been back for a long, long while, really. Since our Auntie Glad died, Auntie Glad was the last of the family, because they all lived on the estate, and I was the last one to pass away, really, and I hadn't been back since then. But sort of curiosity took hold, and I just thought, well, maybe I should go and have a ride and just, you know, see what memories evoke. So I come up the Wolverhampton Road and turn right by the old Hen and Chickens. I think it's one of them buffet things now. And immediately the memories started to flow, because Hen and Chickens was where Stevie Winwood used to play. They used to go to Sunday dances and stuff like that. And it was sort of really posh. You'd go in there. And then as I turned the corner, before you get to the little runner shops, there was a chippy. Well, there still is a chippy, but I mean, it's owned by somebody different now. But as I passed it, well, I pulled in because I wanted to just have a quick deco at the shops. But I pulled in, and I remember being in there the night that Kennedy was killed. And I can see it now. We'd been sent down for a bag of chips, me and our kid. And we were standing there, and the radio was on, but like quite quiet in the background. And it was Raining Cats and Dogs. All down the window pane and everything, and you could hear the traffic outside. And faintly aware, the president has been shot. And I don't know who it was. I recognise him. It was a bloke from up Fairway, I think. He was there, and he says, "Turn the radio up, mate." And he turned it up. And of course, then you started to get the report. And it was like time had stood still. And we just really stood there for a bit, just listening to the report. Anyway, he got the chips and we went back home. And by then, it was on the black and white, so we watched it on the black and white. But it brought back really strong memories of past that. And then next to that was Mr. Ollick's. Mr. Ollick's was a greengrocer's. And I remember it fondly because his lad used to have calipers. He had polio. And we used to go and fetch him on a bike and take him everywhere on a bike. And they lived in the flat upstairs, and he always used to say, "Have an apple," if you went round and up the flat upstairs. And his missus, he was like, he might have Only Fools and Horses who did that thing, not Out of Hours, was he? He was that shopkeeper anyway, Grenville. He'd be the same. He'd have like a brown overall on, red brogues, shocker black hair. He looked Italian, and his missus was totally different, really. It was all like done up to the nines. And we had an eye class fashion shop over the road by the bus stop. And I used to think then, you know, this used to be over the top. And where do wenches round here afford clothes like that? But it was really strong, that memory. And also the end shop, I don't think it is now. The end shop, I know, because our dad used to go in and pay on the tick for the TV. And we used to have a look in the boxes at all the singles. We hadn't got a record player. We used to go and have a look in the boxes. And then one Christmas, I don't know if our Freddie had bought his mother and father a stereogram, but he gied our father, or sold our father, a Green Alba record deck that we had for Christmas. And what we day now is, we might say, "Oh, Dad, look at this. It's the new one by the Nashville Teens or something." Well, our dad had bought 10... 45s then, were they? 45s for us to play on the record player Christmas morning. It was great. Anyway, I carried on. turned left up Payne Road so I could go right in Brook Road. And he tied there now, but the barrel was right on the corner where my dad, my Uncle Bill and my Uncle Eric used to sing on Saturday nights as the Murray Brothers. And as I passed it, I looked across and I could hear them singing and all the folks cheering and shouting in there. And we used to go in the other room and we'd have a glass of dandelion and burdock and then Smith's crisps with the salt and sitting there while our mums and dads like watched our my uncles and my dad sing. Fabulous. Fabulous memory. Turn right into Brook Road. The old college was on the left and we used to go and watch them. It's either there now, it's there, it was in Instate. The old college was on the left. We used to go and watch them on a Saturday. That was all right, really. But it was like a pitch of two halves. The top would be as dry as a bone. And it didn't matter what the weather was like. It must have been under the spring. In fact, it might have been the brook. It was always sodden. But underneath, it was probably because the tunnel for the brook that run from the golf course all the way down Brook Road had go under the football pitch. And it was one of the tests. If you wanted to get in the Dales, that was our gang. It was a gang, really. Just a load of lads. You had to go through from one end to t'other and there was all rots in the tunnel. So, of course, if you was only like six and wanted to get in the gang and you had to go through there and these rots was running all over the place, it was pretty frightening. but it was just one of the things you did. I thought I'd go round the back of the estate and end up at the close where I come from. So I went round... I went round up towards Grafton Road and immediately I looked up Fairway Road and number 16, I think it was where my Auntie Frieda used to live. And that was where I've talked a lot about our Jeff being an influence on me. And he'd sat in the front room with all his guitars and his banjos and his balalaika things and stuff. And I'd go round and sit on, and I'd be on the floor. And he'd be singing old folk songs, John Boyes and stuff, Pete Seeger, all that sort of stuff. But his own songs in Black Country. And I stopped at the bottom of the road for a bit and just looked up and just thought about him there singing. He had such a powerful voice, such a fantastic voice. And he was like a mad professor. He had a massive, great, big black beard that was halfway down his chest. And his hair looked as though he hadn't put a comb through it for like 3 weeks. But he was the most gentle, gentle bloke I could ever meet. And then on the end, right on the end of Grafton Road, the last house, was where probably my best mate at school was, Mickey O'Leary. Now, how we ever got to be mates, I don't know, because his mum and dad, well, they were posh. His mum and dad was a counsellor. His dad was a counsellor, sorry. His mum worked in the offices somewhere and he worked at Chances in the offices. And they dressed in, like, suits and they had pleated skirts and that were our father was in overalls and my mother was in overalls. But we just seemed to hit it off, me and Mick. And I have real, real fond memories. In fact, I remember the first time I went to tie and my mother says, you know, don't get saying anything out of the ordinary and don't get doing this and don't get doing that. And this is the gospel. This is as clear now as the day. I walked in and Mick's dad was there. Kevin was there. And he was in this big couch, this big cheer couch thing. And he'd got one of them big papers that you open up, not like the Mirror, like my dad read. It was a big paper, probably the Times or something like that. And he got a pipe and he was smoking his pipe. He got his waistcoat on. And I put my arms around his neck and he went, "Hello, Billy." And I went, "Hello, Mr. O'Leary." And he says, "Come down and sit here." And we just like got on like arse on fire. And many, many, many years later, Mick was on the board of the Baggies and he invited me for a game. He got in touch with me through Facebook, through our kid, because I am Facebook. And he says, "Come to the East Stand, it's my dad's birthday and I'll take my dad." Oh, I'll tell him. "Come to the East Stand, just say you're with Mr. O'Leary and they'll show you around." Well, I went in, you know. "Yeah, who have you come to see? Because it's all posh, ain't the East Stand." And I said, "I've come to see Mr. O'Leary." And they showed me up, took me coat, showed me up. And I looked down the dining room and Mick was right at the t'other end and his father had got his back to me. and I walked down and he winked. And I just put my arms around Kevin and he went, "Hello, Billy, come and sit down." And it was like I was a six-year-old kid again. Fantastic memories. And they were the family. I went on my first holiday with them. They come round and they asked me mum and dad if they could take me to Scarborough. And I mean, I hadn't got anything. I had to borrow a case. I had to borrow socks off my brother. I had to borrow stuff off my cousins. But we went to Scarborough. We had a fantastic time. I think my dad gave them a fiver or something. But I mean, they spent loads more than that. We had a fantastic time at Scarborough. I remember seeing Frankie Vaughan, Max Jaffa. And then we went in this cafe. It was quite funny, really. Went in this cafe and we both had a Knickerbocker Glory. And I think May and Kevin had hot chocolates. And Adam Faith come and sat next to me. And I said, "Oh, it's Adam Faith." And Mick says, "Who is it?" I said, "It's Adam Faith. He's got a single in the charts." And Kevin, they don't know who he was. It's like a different world, really. But he come over and sat and spoke with me. It was lovely. So that was Mickey's house, Grafton Road. I went up to the top of Grafton Road. on the right-hand side, it's sort there's a nursing home now. But there's still some of the old fields where we used to go. And we'd take tarpaulin, old rugs. And we'd make dens in the trees. And we'd stop there all day and sometimes all night. And you'd take a bottle of pop and some jam and bread. And you'd just stop there and play and pretend that you're miles from anywhere. And in the copse. And you'd climb trees and you'd play football out on the football pitches. And you just think, kids go do that now. You know, they've missed all that. And that was at the, like, halfway up Grafton Road. We don't really know anybody in Grafton Road, except this kid that I remember. I don't really like him. And he was walking down to school one day to Causeway Green. And I chucked half ender at him and cut his head open. And I had to go to the headmaster's office. I don't know why I did it. I think it's just that I don't like him. And but that was my only experience at Grafton Road. You come round the top to Ferndale and the golf course was there then. Obviously now, when I went back, it was all overgrown. But what we used to do, we used to hide behind the trees by the swings. And when they drove off the first tee, they hit a blind spot on the first fairway. And we'd run out, naff the golf balls, watch them search for them. And then we'd wait a couple of hours and then we'd go down the clubhouse and we'd sell their own golf balls back to them. And that was the back of Ferndale Road. Tommy Whitmore lived there. He was the right back in our school team. Snowy white hair, a great, great right back. Come down Oakdale Road, and my auntie Glad's. Well, no, there was the carpenters on the right, and they were a big family like we, really. And Stephen Carpenter became the golf professional at the golf club, and everybody thought, you know, it would be like he was Seve Ballesteros on the estate, because he always weared golfing clothes, and you'd always see him practicing. If he wore practicing, he'd be giving somebody a lesson. And he left school and become, I don't know whatever happened to him, but he left school and become the professional on the Brandor Club. So it was like a paid job. And folks think, well, blimey, you know, that ain't a proper job. But it was, and his brothers played golf and all. Our auntie Glad's was right up the corner. Can't remember the number now. And again, there was Uncle Fred, our Freddy, who was a right Jack the Lad, and our John, who was quite serious, and our barber used to babysit. And I always remember once I broke a tooth. I was plaguing me and wanting me to go to bed, and I just lumped her in the gob and broke a tooth, so that when my mother and father come back from the club on a Saturday night, I was sat there with a swollen lip and no front tooth. And I'd go out for a week, I don't think. Freddie was a nutter. He would just do anything and everything. Everybody loved him. He'd come over some Saturdays when he was at work, and there'd be four and we'd be reading our comics. And he says, "I brung your pocket money." And then there's an old enough to remember this, or know how soft it is. And he'd say, "Here," and he'd rip a 10 bob into four pieces, because you'd have like half crowns, wouldn't you? Two half crowns, five bob. Four half crowns, it'd be 10 bob. But instead of giving you half a crown, he'd rip a 10-bob note in, and half either ago, Freddie, you're as mad as atter, mate, and he'd just laugh, and then he'd give four half crowns and put some sellotape together and take the 10-bob note. He was great. Our John was a bit more serious than that, and our Uncle Fred really was quite serious. Skip the dog was just mad. He'd just run all over the place all the time. And but Auntie Gladys, I mean, after... really, after Sue died, my wife died, I used to go there every Sunday, and it'd fill me with so many stories about growing up in Albury, how we used to climb the flowers in the Traveller's Rest before I went to school. You know, I'd never been to the Bug House in a life, the pictures. And then Mrs. Sherwood, who used to run the Traveller's Rest, took her to see a silent movie, and just endless, endless amount of stories. Just fabulous, fabulous stories. And that was Brook Road. And just over the road was a wench called Linda Elliott. And I suppose you could call her a girlfriend, but a war, really. I mean, I had a girlfriend who lived in Wood Norton Road. It was lovely, you know, lovely blonde hair and stuff like that. But I was absolutely obsessed with the rabbit. And Linda Elliott was the best footballer that was on the estate, really. It was a wench. But I was the best footballer on the estate, so I dumped this other wench for Ellen Sutton, and we used to just go over the for Linda Elliott, and we used to go over the fields and just play for hour and hour and hour. And we like petitioned to get her in the school team, and although I couldn't play in the proper school games, we got her to play in like friendlies and stuff like that. It was probably the first wench to play football in like a boys' school's football team, because it wore ahead of before then. And there was the bottom of Brook Road. And then I turned up the close, and I started to remember everybody who lived. There was 26 houses in the close, bottom to top, like one at the bottom and then and 26 at the bottom. And to go up to a banjo at the top, and that's where the close was at the top. But I tried to remember all of the names of the families that lived there as I was at the bottom, and I left the car at the bottom, and I walked up the top, and I knew Melson's and was on one side, Deakins, Neenan's on the other side, Hawkins, and I was going up, and there were many that I couldn't remember, but it was when I got up to the top, to the close, that it really all come back. Because we were one of the first, our row of terraces, I think there were six, was one of the first houses to build on the estate. So it was just a building site all the way up Ramway. And you could look out to the golf course, and you could look out to the hostel, which is now been built on. And it was just a wonderful place to grow up, because you spend all your time in cement mixers or climbing the scaffolding of our finished buildings and all that. And I think there was, let me try and get it right now. There was Edges, Carters, Rocks, Sharrets, Wee and Sharpies in them six houses. We knew, you know, they were there virtually 20 odd years, the same as me. And really, Skeetys were the closest to us, because Skeetys were next door to we. Sharpies were a lovely, lovely family, but very, very quiet. Mr. Sharp was built like a brick outhouse. Mrs. Sharp was tiny. But the kids never come out and played with me, really. Never come out on the patch and played with me. Lovely kids, but never come out on the patch. With Skeets, because my mother worked the lathes and all that. Mrs. Skeet had, let me just see now. Frankie, Alan, Pauline, Peter, Stephen and Mark. So there were all of them. So where'd I work? I did, because I had all of them. So we used to spend a lot of our time in Skeetys, or they'd come round here and they'd help us get the tie on. Because we could cook, you know, we could cook our tie when we was about six. My mother would say, when you get home from school, pile the taters, put them on a low gas, then stick them out in the oven, put it on, you know, 33 or whatever it was, because I wouldn't have time. By the time Ed got in, It'd be 6 o'clock, and by the time it were cooked, it'd be like 8 o'clock, and we'd got to get in bed for school for then. So the skets were really important to we as we growed up. And I've always kept in touch with them off and on, always kept in touch with them. And they were such a wonderful, wonderful family, the skets. Edges, same, really. Mr. Edge would take us off to football, or he'd take the big un fishing with Gary and Keith. Our day go fishing. Well, I used to get in trouble because I used to get bored and I'd throw bibbles at the floats and stuff like that. So I'd get tied to trees and things like that. Nothing much to do with Sharpies. Nothing much to do with rocks, really. They were kept themselves to themselves and next door. Along the top, there was Sysons. Now, Mr. Syson was Polish and he had snowy white hair, as did Ian, the youngest son. They had some daughters, I can't remember the names, beautiful girls. And Mrs. Syson was a local wench, lovely, lovely. But Mr. Syson was fabulous. And there's one story I can tell. Ian was a-teasing me over Averyligget. Averyligget used to come and knock the door and say, "Is Billy coming out to play? Is Billy coming?" And I go, "I don't want to go out and play with you." And he used to sit there and he used to go, "Billy's in love with Avro. Billy's in love with Avro." Anyway, this one time we were playing on the sun pits and climbing the stuff and all that. And he was really teasing me. He was getting on my rag. And he was sat on the sand with his back to me. And I come down and for some reason I poked up a bag of cement, which was quite heavy, really. Well, it was like half a bag, but it was still heavy for me. But I realised the top was open. And I was saying, if you don't shut up about that, I'm going to pour this cement over you. He carried on. "Billy's in love with Avril." Anyway, I like stumbled in the sand and this cement wasn't all over him. And not only was it dangerous because he could burn your skin, but he couldn't breathe. So I run in thinking, you know, I'm going to get out the road here, otherwise I'm going to be in trouble. And then about 10 minutes later, there's a knock on the door. And I think my father was on night, so he'd just got up. And he opened the door and there was Mr. Syson. He went, "Hello, Vashti." And he went, "Hello, Harry." And he said, Ian was there, like, covered in cement with a little circle round him, like blowing it out off his nose and stuff. And he went, "I think Billy has done this." And my dad shouts at me because I'm upstairs reading the comic, "Billy, come down here now." Anyway, I comes down, I go, "What?" And he went, "Have you all done this?" And I went, "What?" As if, you know, the water kid there covered in grey cement. And he went, "Covered Ian in cement." And I went, "Well." And you know when you go into overdrive because you want to try and explain anything and you start going, well, this happened in this minute, and have a look at this in this minute. And he went, "Shut up." He says, "He's got to go and have a bath now. You're going to sweep all of the mess that you've made in Mr. Syson's entry. And you're grounded for a week." And I went, oh, Dad. And Ian says, can we go over the field after and play, Mr. Dakin?" And he just looked at Mr. Syson, at his dad, and he went, "Oh, what's the use? What's the use, I Vashti?" And he just shrugged his shoulders and we went. Anyway, went and had a bath, all cleaned up, and we went over the field, eh, we? And that was the Sysons. And probably the other biggest family that I remember was the Munleys up the corner, because he was a pain in the neck. Mr. Munley, he was Irish, and every time the ball used to go on the garden, he used to put a knife in it. And I can remember our father, and he used to drink a lot, and then he'd go to confession or whatever they go to on a Sunday, make his confessions, and then come home drunk. And my dad just went over one afternoon, and he just said, "You put a knife through that and I shall just put you through your bloody doer." And that was the last time we ever heard anything on him. And that was our, because the patch was our world, really. It really was our world. It was sort of dirt with a few trees, little shrub trees on. But we used to play football on there. We used to do relays on there. We used to do British Bulldog. We used to collect the fake packets out on the gutters and you'd skim them up the curb, or we'd collect the lollipop sticks and you'd make flyers and you'd toss these flyers off. We'd do anything there. We'd be out there until we got shouted in under the street lamp. There'd be 20 on us planning the next day what we was going to do. It was an absolute magical, magical place to grow up, really. And when I stood there after I'd gone back and I said the over, you know, I mean, Mr. Jones, he used to win prizes at the Sandwell Flower Show. His garden was immaculate, roses was immaculate. I looked down at his house because we used to do edge jumping and we'd like jump over his privet, but be sure we'd squash all his roses. And that was his pride and joy. And there now was this overgrown garden with weeds all over the place. And then the same, who was it up the top? Mr. Syson, his garden was always immaculate, and now there's bloody concrete and two wrecked cars on there. But worst of all, which is why I'll never ever go back, I looked at number 10, where we growed up, and there was a curtain rail that was hanging in the front window, and the net curtain was filthy and stained. The front garden, I mean, our dad wore a garden, but he kept it neat and tidy and planted pansies. It was just 3 foot high of grass. The front door was all chipped and the glass was smoshed and cracked. And I felt like smoshing the door down, you know, and whoever was in there saying, look, mate, I lived here 40 years ago and it was nothing like this. And you've let it get to this. And I could feel the anger rising. I really could. But there's, and then Mrs. Morton come out. There's only Mrs. Morton, I think. And it might be Mrs. Deakin at the end who's still there. Everybody else is gone, either passed away or moved. And I come out and I said, hello, Billy. And I went, oh, hello, Mrs. Morton. Am you all right, Bab? And I went, yeah, yeah. And I was telling her about our John and how I'd come up. And I said, Billy, don't say anything. If I were you, I'd just walk down the close and I wouldn't come back again. He said, you wouldn't believe what goes on up here now. And I said, oh, I feel so sorry for you, Mrs. Morton. And I said, well, you know, it is what it is and I live here and I have to get on with it. He said, but it ain't the place that you growed up in and it never will be the place that you growed up in. Not here, up the close, not Rockdale Road, not Ferndale Road, not the estate. It ain't the same place. You know, then you'd meet somebody round the shops from Grafton Road, you know them by the first name. If you was a bit short, they'd just give the shopkeeper the money and you'd get them next time you said it. You know, there ain't none of that. There ain't none of that. And I said, and although we don't have any money, our houses was clean and we were proud of our houses and we looked after our houses and we looked after each other. And I said, well, you know, that's true, Mrs. Morton. So I said, look, I said, just turn round. Go down, get in your car, you've been now, but don't come back. And then I went off back into the house. And I had one last look at number 10 and I walked down and I got in the car and I turned the key and I drove down towards Brook Road. I had one last look at the tunnel, one last look where the college had been, turned left, slowed down where the barrel might have been, and then I thought, well, I even go in by the shops and I turned left down Ashes Road and went home. And that was the last time I went on Cakemore. But I can tell you something, that place made me and it's probably like a lot of other folks. You look back now and you realise the folks that you growed up with and the kids you growed up with and the lives that they had and how difficult it was. And you know that that's never going to leave you, really. It's never, ever going to leave you. And it's filled you with values that a lot of folks ain't got anymore. You know, I'm envious. You'd give the shirt off the back to somebody. You'd never judge. All things like that come from the Cakemore. And I was in the end, I was really glad that our John had told me about Brandall and I made that journey because I think it was so important. And that was Cakemore and me.
The undiscovered black country, the folks don't seem to know. The undiscovered black country, where everyone should go. people walk or cycle round, they pass the time of day. The undiscovered black country has places tucked